And welcome back to the Shed of Basketball Truth. That is Studio 3 for Ball Don't Lie Australia. All right, we've got a couple of guests as promised. We've got a former Northside Wizards coach who has jumped on the show. We recorded something late last week that we'll sneak into this week's show, and of course he's back, Mr. Jared Pickering. He's back in the seat, and he could not be after I insulted his Orlando Magic during the week, and he's had to come in to redeem some honor, I want to go with, Jared.
Redeem some honor, but not so good for you. You've had some big names on since I was on last, and not only do I come back alone, so I don't even bring Ant with me. So, you know, you've had the best, now you can get the rest.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ant does sort of say that the other way around when you and him come in, but you know, that's fine too. Like, you know, I'm just happy to have you guys here when you are. So, you know, I'm not disappointed at all. And if you're wondering where our work experience kid Elliot is, he told me he had tickets to go and watch a DJ in a Macca's car park.
That's about right.
Yeah, something to do with a prank TV host. That is an Ashton Kutcher. That's about all I took from the conversation. So, but I'm sure he'll be back. But look, before we jump over to our chat with Jamie Petty, mate, couple of big signings. And I say big very deliberately because we've got a couple of big signings in the NBL 1 North. One in Kuat Noi, heading to the Salties. And what was the quote he dropped?
Yeah, we can just pull it up because I like to make sure that I quote people correctly rather than shoot from the hip.
But, whereas I just butcher it for right from the jump. So,
but let's go ahead. We've got the time to get it perfect. If you think my past two seasons were exciting, get ready for this one.
Classic Noi, very quotable.
Very quotable. And look, honestly, he certainly has walked the walk the last two seasons, hasn't come away with the win, which is what he's been alluding to a couple of times. But even last year against Gold Coast, they were very, very close to pulling off the upset early in the playoffs. So it will be exciting to see him go up there and join what has become a very stacked Darwin roster.
Yes. Well, yeah, we'll get into it in a couple of weeks here on the show, but we do an NBL 1 preseason show. But on the men's side, I see it as five. I see there as being a genuine top five, and then another group of teams that literally are going to be uncomfortable on any night, and. Then there's going to be a group of teams that might be a little bit left behind if they're not careful.
For sure. It's definitely looking like a top-heavy league from the top five perspective, for sure. But as you said, those middle teams are going to cause problems as well. So, and this is all on paper. We haven't even played the games yet.
That is exactly the problem. And look... Unfortunately, in the last couple of NBL 1 North seasons, injuries have been real, and how teams have been able to deal with those injuries depth-wise has unfortunately been a real need for a lot of teams at the top. So it's going to be a very spicy season once we actually get to play some basketball, of course, with no blitz this year. You know, practice games here or there, it's interesting, but... look, another big signing dropped though for the team that Noi and Rip City almost knocked off. The Gold Coast Rollers signing.
Some might say they almost rolled the Gold Coast team.
Leave that to me, mate.
In workshopping, it still doesn't work.
Yeah, leave the puns to me, Toby. It's okay. Yeah, look, Will Magne. Reuniting with Jason Kidd. Last time they did that, obviously it was with the Capitals and they took out the league. So obviously Gold Coast Rollers fans, you'll be pretty happy with where you're probably very happy with where you're sitting and how that's looking and that combination going together. And just Will Magne, what he's doing at the moment in the at that NBL level, and he's got this string of health. He could obliterate some teams, not single-handedly because that doesn't happen, but with that combo of him and Kadee and the other pieces and the Tenfield Sadler coaching, it's going to be a difficult night to head down to a lower Gold Coast.
Yeah, and I think I'm actually excited to see just how much he can do when he's not playing good defense, rolling to the rim, catching and finishing, but also just sort of extending his game, which we all know he can, particularly at this level. He's definitely going to be a problem. He'll probably be first on the scouting report just on the season, not just for that particular game. So exciting times for Gold Coast for sure.
It is indeed. All right, let's jump into our chat with Jamie Petty.
Who should you have next on Ball Don't Lie Australia?
All right, Ball Don't Lie Australia listeners, he's back with a slightly new job title, which we'll get into shortly. But Jamie Petty, mate, well, welcome back.
Hey, Matt, thanks for having me again. A lot's changed in a very short time, so happy to be back.
A little bit. We had Chris Anstey on a week or so ago, and it was neck and neck. Messages of congratulations for getting Chris Anstey on, and what's going on with Jamie? Lots of people reaching out and just curious. Let's jump straight into it. Let's get to it. We know as basketball fans when things come out and, these sort of things happen quickly and the words, mutually and parted ways and different things happen. But like I told people on the show, I reached out to you, you said it was all positive. What's going on though, mate? You're heading south.
Yeah, it's been a really good career development opportunity for me. So I actually had a job offer from Geelong United, a really big association in Victoria, for a full-time role. So that was as the Pathways Performance Manager. And part of that was coaching their NBL1 women's team. So I kind of weighed everything up just career-wise with my full-time work and, decided it was too good of an opportunity to pass down. Obviously, the NBL1 stuff is great and consumes all of our time and energy as coaches, but for those who don't know, it is only very much part-time work, part-time pay. So, with this full-time role for Geelong United Basketball, I just couldn't turn it down.
Nice. So obviously leaving the Wizards, is there any shout-outs of members of the club or anything that, those sort of people behind the scenes who really help everyone along the way? Any shout-outs before you go?
Yeah, that was the hardest decision, to be honest. The career component of it, it was quite an easy choice. It's a great opportunity that I've got. But leaving this group was what, I guess, caused the most delay in my decision-making. There's just so many good people around that club, but it is hard to say goodbye. And, there's too many to name all of them. But obviously Mark Roble has been fantastic and super supportive. When I came to him with the news, encouraged me to do, what was right by me, in the long term. And Cam Meeser, the president, and I have to thank, Lyndon Briefies for getting me there in the first place. It's just a great organization. And I can't speak highly enough of Northside. So I'm excited to watch how they go this year.
Yeah, look, they are, as they always do, first game and last game against the Caps. So those games in the middle, I also wish them the best of luck. mate, speaking of the team and the players, who are you really looking forward to keeping track of down south, as this NBL1 team develops under DMACC? Who are the individuals on the team that you're really looking forward to keep track of and just seeing how they go this year?
Well, I think, the few that are going to, I think, have really big jumps this year. I'm really excited to watch Jed Richardson. He has been working his absolute butt off in the preseason. And, to have DMACC, who's one of the best individuals coaches, in the world, not just Australia, but in the world, working out with him, he's going to take a really big jump. And I think the same is probably true for Deshaun Ross-Powan as well. He's been working really hard in the off season and has all the tools. I think we've all seen glimpses of what he can do, but I think he can take the next step this year and work on that consistency. He can be a really good player in this league for a long time to come.
Nice. Okay, so let's skip ahead to Geelong and obviously the women's head coach down there. And Geelong's announced Jada Rice in the last 24 hours. What big things are we expecting from her as she comes over?
Oh, she last played for Norwood actually in the Central Conference where she won a championship. So that's certainly something that in recruiting that I value. If we can get players with past experience in great levels of success, that's really important. She had a storied college career at Alabama and she's currently playing, just finishing up her season in Greece in the A1 League. So dominant interior presence, great shot blocker, elite rebounder. So we're really looking forward to getting her over to Geelong and adding her to the group. She'll be a great addition.
Nice. And, of course, NBL 1 South is home to the undefeated national champs in the Bendigo Braves. So, and, you know, we had Mark Alabakov on, obviously, a friend of the show. He's been on a couple of times and he talks about this league being one of the most difficult in all of the NBL ones. You've chosen a difficult place to go and play, go and coach basketball down there in that sense. But what's really going to be your target goal for this women's team down there with Geelong United for the season?
Yeah, I like a challenge, mate, and facing up against Bendigo, we get that that challenge in round two. So, you know, they haven't dropped a game in over a year. It'll be great playing against them. I'm looking forward to going up against Mark and his group. Yeah, you're right. It's a really tough league. And if you look at the amount of Opals, WNBL players, playing in that league, players with WNBA experience, it is really, really tough. There's no night off. I think, you know, if we can get back to finals, that would be a huge accomplishment considering we've got four pretty key outs from the playing group. So we do have to rebuild a roster, but, you know, the club is a really attractive place to play and recruit players to. So once we put all that together, we'll certainly be hoping to make a finals push. We'll see how we go.
Nice. And look, we cannot possibly let you go without talking about NBL finals, not the one. Obviously, we're painstakingly close to the tip-off of all of the NBL 1 seasons, but the NBL playoffs are here. And, of course, the Jack Jumpers and, excuse me, not Perth, but Melbourne United are going to be facing off. Two teams we both had fairly high up there in our predictions last time you're on, mate. So what's your prediction for the NBL finals?
Yeah, it's what a final series it's been so far. Like we've just seen unreal series between both the semi-final series, really. But I like Melbourne United. I just think, you know, the way Delhi's playing, like their class right now, the fact that Illawarra pushed them so hard, they've kind of had their mettle tested a little bit, which is, I think, as a coach, that's certainly something you'd want moving into finals. But, you know, between Coach Beekerman and just the quality of that roster, they really have been the measuring stick all year. So I think it's probably fair that they get the nod. They're the favourites at the moment, but we've seen what this Tassie group can do in finals and they'll have a little bit of hunger about, getting back here. And it's going to be a cracking series to watch either way.
Definitely will be. And obviously I'll have my complete opinion rounded out when we put the rest of this episode together, because I want to back United. I think they're going to do it, but you just can't count out these Jackies. They just find a way to stay in things, which I think is so amazing considering the culture they've been able to build in such a short time down there is just too impressive to write off. But I'm desperate to watch this grand final series. I think it's going to be an absolute banger, and I hope it goes the distance. As always. But, mate, thank you very much for jumping on. It's always a pleasure. Always, always. And, look, we'll definitely have to get you back on at some point. Hopefully after, was it Geelong United raised the NBL 1 South trophy? But even if that doesn't happen, we'll definitely get you back on in the future. And thank you again for always giving us your time.
Thanks, Mel. I appreciate it and look forward to watching my Northside boys take on your Caps guys round one. And go the Wiz.
You're listening to the Ball Don't Lie Australia podcast.
Huge thank you, as always, to Jamie Petty for joining us there. All right. Look, it's not a segment we normally do. But look, with the few things that have sort of happened in our basketball world lately, I thought it'd be nice to just do it as a one-off. And hey, if things pop up, and you know, this isn't like a shacked and a fool. It's more of a look at some things that went wrong and what are the learnable sort of moments from those. And look, it's what went wrong and what takeaways can we have? When things really go wrong on the basketball court, in the sense of when one player's actions really lead towards a loss and how that could have been done differently. And I'm going to say this one, and I'm going to put some, like, you know, I could be a real asshole about this, but I'm not going to be.
It's not like you.
I'm trying something new. look, we're gonna stay at home. We're gonna go to the WNBL, and we're gonna go to Maley over in Perth. That last
gut-wrenching, brutal,
yeah,
whatever word you want to throw, tough, for miserable
45 seconds of that game. It's, you know, it's all tied up. She goes to the free throw line, right? She misses those two free throws. I don't knock her for missing free throws. I've missed plenty in my time. That's a big moment. And the way that first one hits the front of the rim, you could tell that she was feeling that's a big moment. Like, I don't knock people for, you know, had she have completely airborne it or, you know, skied that thing over the backboard, totally different story. Totally different. But, you know, she missed a couple of free throws. One short, one off to the right. That happens. Flyers go down the other end. Lynx come away with a steal. She misses an open layup. She didn't go in deliberately to miss the layup, but you could, if you watch the replay and I saw it live, you know, she was almost surprised at how open she was considering that situation. And that classic thing, she went for the layup. She wasn't trying to miss. She just did. You know, again, might have been moment. Then there's a bit of a scuffle for the ball, and she gets the ball back, but then she goes for effectively nothing shot when you've got Mercedes standing right there, who ended up, yeah, went on to be the finals MVP, towering over her, went up, was way too close. She went to put this shot up. It was just taken away from her in that moment. For me, that's the real teachable moment, you know, and it's hugely tough. Because in that moment, she would have been emotionally and physically exhausted. She just darted all the way up the court. She'd missed, went to put something back up quickly, was, you know, had clock pressures, all that. What's the smart play there? Of course, hold onto the ball, get it back to the Lynx, use the clock, and worst case, you know, you miss one, miss another one, and we go to OT. And look, who knows? But look, very tough few minutes there for Mayla. I'm sure she's analyzed the guts out of her. I'm sure everybody, yeah, you know, under the sun has told her this, that, and the other. But realistically, you know, you miss free throws from time to time. You know, when defense doesn't play you like you expect them to, you know, sometimes you're going to miss layups. But yeah, just if you're ever in that situation, the big is right there and you're not going to fade away at all, maybe hold on to that ball.
And I think that's
pass the ball around,
where coaches love to hang their hat on mental toughness. Mm. And that really is the mental toughness of being able to go from some significant things that did not go your way and then still make the correct decision out of it. And that's all she needed to do there was to kick it back out, get a reset, see what happens. And 99 times out of 100, she would do that. Mm. But just in that moment, off the back of the unfortunate events leading up to it,
and the full game of her team being behind like the entire way up to that point, and now they're all squared up. There was a lot going on.
So, and that's it. And I think, your point of there's nothing to get mad at in the sense that no one intentionally makes those errors, but it's sort of, where do you go from here? How do you rebuild? How do you not let those, that patch define you going forward? And you just try and work on that sort of next play mentality that really is the key to any sport. But in basketball, in particular, in the last minute, you have to be able to go from good to bad and everything in between and not lose sight of what the next play requires.
Yeah. And you know, that's the idea of talking about it, isn't to throw muck, but if you're in a similar situation or even just seeing a player of this level have that kind of situation, you know, it gives you opportunity to learn from it. You know, kick, bring the ball out, have a quick look at the clock, see what being clock aware in late game situations is so important.
Yes.
So important.
Nice segue to our next play.
Yes. Well, all right. If you're a Kent State fan, well, this has been a tough week. All right. Yeah. Kent State go 1 point up. 6 seconds left.
Jared? Yeah, so to be clear, they were down one with possession. They managed to get a bucket with 6 seconds left, and on the ensuing inbounds where four Kent State players retreated to play defense in the half court slash sort of extending a little bit, but to be clear, four players were retreating. One man, Julius Rollins, decided to charge in, and he decided to foul, clearly thinking that they were down, not up. The opposition team goes down, makes two free throws, and that's the end of Kent State's season from a tournament perspective at the conference level. And also, if they had won that game, they would have been playing in the NCAA tournament this weekend. So again, that one had more animated coaching staff, I think.
Yes.
At least that we saw, because admittedly, yep, I was focused on Ali in the WNBA case. And that coach needed a hug. You know, obviously his teammates were gobsmacked. And you do feel bad because, again, it's not an effort or desire thing. It's just a misreading of the situation. And
complete and utter opposite of what, you know.
You want to say, it's the key of just reminding people in the moment, hey, if we score, here's what we're doing defensively. Mm-hmm. If we don't score, we need to foul. You sort of reiterate the situation. I'm sure that happened. You know, this isn't it's just, you kind of do everything you can. And that's actually, for me, the beauty of college basketball. But we've seen our fair share of mistakes over the basketball season in all jurisdictions. And it's just something where you hope as a player that again, doesn't define, because it's a college basketball player, probably has aspirations of playing professionally somewhere.
He's not going to do it again.
For sure.
Right. Like, there's no way anyone on that roster or even in that building is ever going to make that kind of mistake in a basketball game.
It doesn't matter if it's Division 27 Social League 15 years from now. If they walk out in that situation, you know they're going to tell everyone on the floor, hey, if we score, no fouls.
Yeah. Chris Webber, clean sheet when it came to calling timeouts he didn't have after that. So, you know, except in the Uncle Drew movie, which I thought was brilliant. Not the whole thing, but that
it had moments. It was an underrated movie. Yeah, like, I enjoyed it. I saw it in theaters when it came out in the US and was not disappointed. It didn't win. I don't think it won the Best Picture Oscar. But
I had a very different viewing experience. I waited until it came out on Amazon Prime and watched it, had some chuckles, and there was a couple of truly great basketball sort of, you know, almost every basketball player who was in there had a shot at themselves taken.
Yes.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah.
Love that.
Very, very good.
Love that. But yeah, hopefully this young man can, you know, shake that off, have a career somewhere. And he's never going to make that mistake again.
No. It's just unfortunate. It's always magnified. You know, he could have done this in, you know, game 3 or 4 of the season. I think it still makes highlights, but it's as quickly forgotten. It's just the gravity of the particular moment that amplifies it even further, and unfortunate for him. But again, a learning opportunity, and you just hope the coach didn't go too hard. And I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure it was, you put your arm around him and you just wonder why those were the chips you were dealt in that situation.
Yeah, look, you know, tough sitch, but yeah, learnable, teachable moments from both of those games. All right. Now, before we get into the grand final series, which is getting spicier, as we saw, where we've watched it. This will go out after game two, of which we are extremely confident.
We predicting or are we?
Well, we did turn it off to start recording with 5 seconds left, but Jackie's, we're in one hell of a position, so it'll be fine.
Yes.
Yep. So one apiece, heading back to the Big Island,
not the Little Island.
Yep. Which again, Scott Roth just continues to play his role to a T. He's now got the fans on board forever, pretty much forever. You know, because I always think about it where coaches in these sort of situations will lose their jobs from one of two ways. They'll either lose them in the locker room, and then losses will incur, and then eventually it'll be out you go, or fan base will lose interest, and then some long string of losses will come, and then same result. This has got to buy him like a couple of years of love, end of contract, even with some losses. I mean, he's playing this this sort of hero of Tasmania role quite well.
I think he's found a way to galvanize the fan base. You know, whether it's all true, I know it's like plucky underdog type mentality, and you look at the roster and go, under what now? It's a very strong roster, but look, they get down. The fans do not quit. They chip away. That's Tasmania, but has been for since their inception, and you don't imagine it's going to change anytime soon.
No, it isn't. But I do have some CG43 trivia. Going into game two of the NBL Grand Final Series, I'm sure there's a Hungry Jack's word in there somewhere, but he was 10th all-time most three-pointers made in a season. He was sitting in the 10th spot. Just wondering if you can name off the top of your head, who do you think might be ahead of him? And the fact that he isn't already on top of this list is kind of crazy, the way he has played his career.
Yeah, so, all right. I get, is the floor open or do I have to pick the person you're trying to lead me to here?
No, you can choose.
Let's go Shane Heal.
Shane Heal is at the top.
The
very top, 02 and 03 season.
We've got standard differentiations away from the top, basically. He's on his Pat Malone with distance.
Well, with one.
It's still on.
By one. And then there's another player underneath, and then Shane Heal also has the number 3 spot and then the number 6 spot as well, just to really wrap things up a little bit. Who else might be in there?
Andrew Gaze.
Andrew Gaze is in the number 2 spot and the number 9 spot.
Look at that. So now we're going again.
2 and 9.
All right, now we are starting to stretch.
Yep.
Derek Rucker.
D-Ruck, I believe he is in the 8th spot. Spot number 8 in 1990. Wow. Yeah.
It's incredible.
I was expecting, like with the evolution of our game and things, a lot of these players are from a bygone era almost. No one ahead of him is current, and barely any of them are in the, like, 03-04 is the latest season. Yeah. Everything else is before that, and you think of – you know, analytics and how everything's changed, I would have thought this would be a more recent thing, but you know, it just goes to show how much Shane and Andrew and some others really got them up back in the day. But I've got two more names, mate. One is a sometimes commentator, and the other one is a coach in the league.
Okay. All right.
One used to play with...
John Riley.
There you go. Yes.
Shouldn't have had to wait there. I'm just cycling through the coaches. Like, is my 36ers coach? He didn't shoot threes like that.
And one last, John Riley's on there in the 4 spot. And where are we? In the 7 spot, I believe.
All right. Sometimes commentator Copeland.
Copeland.
How good am I tonight?
Well,
where was this when Ian was here?
Well, we haven't got to local card shop Woolloongabbacracken yet, so.
But just on your point, it is truly amazing to me that Shane Hill was top spot with a season 20 years ago, and it did it triggered another memory that was brought to light, because it is March Madness for the NCAA college basketball season, and almost 10 or 11 years ago, maybe even more than that now, Ali Farouk-Manesh of the University of Northern Iowa hit it an absolute, you know, crazy three-pointer with 30, 40 seconds left. And it was one of those ones, push it up the floor. They already had the lead. David is about to take down the Goliath White. He pulls the trigger on this three-pointer. And I'm like, watching it, and I'm going, it doesn't seem as amazing as it did in real time, because you don't remember that people just didn't shoot transition threes 14 years ago at the volume they do now. So it was crazy for two reasons. One, David's taking this shot instead of holding the ball. Two, it's a transition three, not a layup.
Mm-hmm. Which nowadays is a layup.
And so looking at Shane Hill from that perspective, it's like, yeah, this is, you know, amazing that that record has stood for that. And you look, it looks like it's going to stand, because it's Chris being as close as he is still quite a ways away. And he's got to play in the final series to try and knock it down. So,
Hey, Jackies might help him out and win a couple of games and, you know, really stretch it out. But, yeah, going into game two, it was 19 threes.
Yeah.
That's a lot of threes.
It's a lot of threes. Not that he can't do it. He certainly can.
Well, it's bubbles.
Yeah.
It's just bubbles. That's it. That's all you need to say.
Yeah, there was there was an Oakland Grizzlies player that made news for, I think he shot all season, like, let's say he shot 200 shots, 8 of them were twos. So, and bubbles is not quite there, but he could be if he wanted to be.
So, yeah, he can still put the ball on the ground with a bit of aggression.
So. Yeah, much to his chagrin.
Yeah. But, all righty. Well done, mate. Well done. And look, yeah, crazy to think with the evolution of the game, how many threes these guys got back in the day. But anyway, all right. So I've got this one. I'm just going to go with Marcus Lee. Discuss. Obviously, we're now looking at the NBL Grand Final series. Jackies United one game apiece. Marcus Lee, I know you've had some thoughts. Just wanted to give you an opportunity to share those thoughts with the world.
Yeah, Marcus Lee has been a frustration of mine, not because of what he does or doesn't do, but because of what he could do every game. You just feel like with that frame and that ability, dating back to his days at the University of Kentucky, I was sitting there going, I don't get it. Why are you not 20-10 at this level? It looks like you can do it. And so that's a sort of pet peeve frustration of mine. But with the Jack, I will give him some leeway here. At Kentucky, not necessarily easy to play someone over him. In Tasmania, they do have a backup center that might be very good at basketball. Did sign with an NBL 1 team.
Don't need to say might be.
And it was a frustration of mine. Now, I got to say, Scott Roth, hats off. Didn't have a choice in game two of the Perth series. Had to actually start Magne because Marcus made himself unavailable for that one. But in game three stayed with the hot hand and went with Magne. Now final series has been a little back and forth, and I think Marcus Lee did actually play a good game too, at least what we watched. We didn't watch all of it. But I just prefer for Tasmania Magne, but I also think Scott Roth might, and this is just more of a balancing the rotation and whatnot. And I got to be honest, through the final so far, Scott Roth has not put a foot wrong. So I'm not second guessing.
Yeah, look, it's he does a good job. He finds a way to get these second games in the bag, wins these game twos with a high clip. So,
and you get the sense that his game ones, it's not that he throws them, but he really does try to see what he has, what matchups he can exploit, who might be built for the particular series. And I'm sure this isn't to at all say Dean Vickerman doesn't have to do it either or isn't doing it. It's just you feel like, again, we're talking David Goliath. Melbourne is Goliath here. So it's just not as noticeable when you have the pieces that Dean has.
Indeed. All right. Look, let's look at the Jackies. I've got Circle Deer. Who needs to be better for them? And look, it's hard to go past, you know, namesake. Jordan Crawford needs to be better. And I can't help but think Doyle. Doyle also. When those two are firing, Jackies, they are a tough team to beat.
Yeah, and it is interesting that we're talking about the imports who were part of the reason that I liked them so much from the outset of the season and halfway through the season, and now in the heat of, you know, in the crucible of the playoffs, the other players are definitely pulling their weight. And again, not to say that, you know, when you have all the shots and all the responsibility and you're the primary ball handler, secondary ball handler, all of these things, it's not that they're not doing their job. It's just that, yeah, to beat Melbourne, they need to be better than what they have been thus far. And I think probably Doyle surprised me a little bit only because he has good size. He has, you know, the physicality, you can't seem to get to him. Jordan Crawford is very small. And this is not a league where physicality is the name of the game. And we even saw Bryce Cotton struggle a little bit against Tasmania in the last series. So I think there's always going to be that issue. But Doyle's someone that you just feel like can fall out of bed and get 25 points. And he just hasn't been able to get it clicking the last few games. But on the other hand, that might be an ominous sign for Melbourne.
Yeah, well, look, Milton Doyle got 13 and 10 in that game too. And look what happens, Jackies win. But, yeah, definitely coming through the semi-finals and the play-in and those later games, just got the feeling that when Doyle was on, like, it was just a game changer for everyone else. Like, it just took the pressure off everyone else around him. And, yeah, the Jackie just looked so much better when he was firing, and they really miss him a lot when he's not playing at that Milton Doyle level that we've come to expect.
Yeah, they're sort of a jab-jab team, not a haymaker team. Mm. And they can really struggle to get points in phases, particularly when Doyle's not firing. So when he is firing, all of a sudden you get a driving kick to Drimmick. You get the McDonald layups. You get a Magne finish, and it's the icing on the cake. Right now they're missing the cake.
Just a whole heap of icing. All right, mate. Prediction for game 3.
My prediction is no one's going to watch it. No, I'm being sarcastic. But I do hate that we always end up backed up with the FIBA window throwing us into AFL, NRL, and now Melbourne Grand Prix season. It's just like, can we catch a break and just get these games free and clear of any other major sporting events? But with that said, I still go back. Melbourne is the deepest team. They have the most talent. They did it, you know, Scott Roth did the nice underdog, out defend the island, blah, blah, blah. This is back, you know, I just want to see Melbourne assert their dominance because look, if they don't get this one, it is going to be very, very tough to win the series, which congratulations, it's a 5-game series, way to go out on a limb. But I think this is where you just trim the rotation, get everything through the guys' hands who you want to go to that you want your season to depend on. And this is Melbourne United's chance for that game.
It is indeed. Look, give me United. I think with this whole little island, big island stuff, that's now done. Jackies have won that game. Jackies did a great job getting back into this, that game too. They were down. We both said it as we were watching. it felt like the Jackies were done. It felt like United was just getting a roll on, but they found a way to stop that lead from creeping out any further and then hold it there and then Rotto slowly bring it in. They had plenty of time. They gave themselves time to get that lead back, and they were able to get it done down the stretch at home. Can they do that in front of a United crowd if they get in that similar situation? And both these games have gone a similar way, with United getting those second quarter, you know, double digit leads out. First game at you when they're away, couldn't come back. Second game, they're at home, very friendly crowd. They were able to do it, get back into it, and then get it done, you know, right at the end, despite what old Delhi thought about the very quick jump ball call. But look, you know, Jackies are able to do that at home. Can, you know, if this thing goes that same way, I just can't see him doing that against United with their depth, without that crowd element. But look.
And it has to be a Doyle Crawford game. I mean, this is what you bring him in for. This is what you need him for, is to set the tone early and establish their dominance so that everyone can build off it. Because you just feel like this is the turning point in the series, where whoever wins this, again, spoiler alert, 5-game series, winning game 3 is usually important. Mm-hmm. But it's just going to be very tough to overcome that either way.
It is indeed. All right. Look, let's settle an argument. Let's get to settling an argument. Well, I say an argument. It was rather one-sided. I know I'm right and you think you're wrong. Or you don't yet, but you will. All right, let's head over to the NBA and have a look at a delightful little expansion team called the Orlando Magic.
This expansion team from 30 years ago, yes.
I'm sorry, was there something there I said that was wrong?
Misleading, perhaps, not wrong.
All right, Orlando Magic fans.
All three.
Hang on, what do I say? The majority of the ones I know are in the room. okay. But, well, there's lots on the internet, so this is where this is going. Yeah. So, look, Orlando Magic fans, during the week, myself and Jared got a little bit heated in a group chat.
It was a stray caught by someone who is a Magic fan in relation to the quality of the jerseys that the Orlando Magic have worn since their inception.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't well received, to say the least.
Look, yes, to give a little bit of backstory, Mitchell and Ness have dropped the new Vince Carter, or the retro style Vince Carter. I'm a big fan of Vince Carter, not a big fan of that particular jersey.
And he didn't exactly light the world on fire in Orlando, so I was curious as to why he got an Orlando Magic jersey, but I get the Vinsanity approach, but it's not really a fondly remembered jersey from a fan perspective. No,
which then led down the rabbit hole of someone thinking that all Orlando Magic jerseys are fire, and me calling absolute cap on that and just saying, I'm not.
I don't know if I said they're all fire, but you said none of them were.
Compared to what I said, you were the opposite opinion. That is true. So. Yeah. Look, yeah. So we thought we'd just do a simple draft and we'll put it to the people out there on the internet. So look, we'll do Snakies. We'll do two. So do you want the first one or do you want next two?
I will give me the two in a row.
Two in a row. Okay. All right. Well, I am, in that case, should come as no great surprise. I'm going to take the Orlando Magic jersey with the Magic across the front, the Penny Hardaway T-Mac with the darker blue stars, yep, with the sky blue background. And look, there's a reason that's like the Mitch and Ness. Whenever they bring that one back, that one sells out almost straight away. So,
and I have the shorts, the actual slick stars, shiny,
nice, you know,
very heavy.
Nice.
But the jersey I haven't sprung for yet.
Okay.
One day.
Well, look, you know, I'd love to buy it and have it as a potential prize for you to lose over and over and over again as part of Crack'em, but that might be a bit too cruel. All right. There's my one. And frankly, look, probably the best. So I'm very happy with my first choice.
I'm going to go with and I'm wearing the shorts, the blue and white pinstripe mid-90s, 94-95, Anthony Hardaway strip. That jersey is still fire. I think it's clear cut. I admit the offset stars are good, but that blue really pops. It actually is a it's a cool jersey to rock. Penny has, you know, awesome sneakers to go with it. So you get the combination there. So that's my second pick, and now I can roll into my third pick, which is going to surprise you. I think in this may be, I think, an awesome day party, a Darty jersey, if you will. If you want to rock something, the Mike Miller white version of the same jersey that, that Mal just went with in the blue for T-Mac. That white jersey. Now, we do have a problem. I look terrible in white jerseys.
As do most dads. Something to do with the abdomen not being quite as rigid as it once was. Yes.
But that, to me, is still awesome. And I thought Mike Miller rocked it.
Mike Miller did.
Yeah. But it's still a killer jersey. And I know there's some other places to go, but let's be honest, it's probably the black and white pinstripes. This was really just the alternate color for the blue that I went with Penny. So I wanted to go somewhere else and leave you with, you've got choices. You've got the Dwight Howard, just the straight all caps Orlando putrid blue. That's really not anything. You've got the current iteration, which is the pinstripe disaster. But yeah. I'll let you take the floor.
Thanks. Can we just both agree quickly that the orange and black is just awful?
Well, you understood the reason behind it. It wasn't good. But that, well, they did. So they went with the gray first to bring it in slowly. Oh, we want to throw some orange because it's the orange state, Florida. Get around orange. It's great. Then they just went with the straight up orange, which wasn't much better. But yes, the was it black or graphite? It was that sort of not black, but black.
It was awful.
With orange, it was
huge. And there's a couple of versions of the orange and black. But,
and they've gone away from it entirely now. Yeah. Like that's, you know, it's bad when they do it and they just pretend it never happened. And that's exactly what they did with the, I think that was the City Edition. 19,
yes, it 2021. Was. look, I will take, I'm going to take this one here. One of the new ones, no words.
Oh, I like that one, yeah.
No words.
You've done well.
Just the logo across the chest, the swoosh, the Disney, of course, sucker for some Disney branding, especially on a jersey I like, and just the black at the top, dark blue at the bottom, and the stars almost mixed in between. So, that's what I'll take. And I think with that, I'll probably have you covered on the socials, but hey. You never know. Maybe you just get all
the Penny jersey is the, yeah. To me, it's tough. Now I've got the T-Mac jersey you spoke of in, not the shiny. You know what are they? They've got the names. Sorry, not going to remember them. But I've also got the Penny version of that jersey. I've got the Penny in the blue and white pinstripe, and then I've got the Shaq in the black and white pinstripe, which is really just you have to have a Shaq jersey, but black and white pinstripe, it's not as good.
Yeah, look, and I could have fought really dirty here. Like I could have, you know, I could have gone with the Shaq Lakers jersey, a Shaq Heat jersey, and then a Dwight Lakers jersey, you know, and really stuck the knife in.
But you're
I took
than that.
The high road. I'm better than that. Yeah. Just barely better than
that. Not so better that you won't mention it, but better enough not to actually draft it. So.
Yes. That would have been uncouth. That would have been, you know, a step too far. But look, we'll put it out to the people and we'll see who's actually gonna come home and win that argument. But I tried hard and I found a second jersey, mate. Found a second jersey that I like.
You did well.
Yeah. It was tough going, but got through it. All right. Now let's get to it's that time of the evening, mate. It's time for a bit of local card shop of Woolen Gabba Kraken.
And I've got no one to lose to.
You don't, but you might still find a way. All right. We've got some local card shop Kraken, and then look, let's round it out with a working hypothesis.
I can win that.
Yeah, well, internet might say no. Okay, we've got We have here a 2022-2023 NBA Optics Pack, 5 cards, and wow. Okay.
This is either good or bad. I've seen the top
and I've seen the top and the bottom. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put that card on the bottom and I'm going to turn this way. If you haven't played Local Card Shop for Woolloongabba Kraken before, this is how it goes. I read the back of the card. I don't show Jared the front. And I read the back of the card. Whenever I get to that player's name, I say somebody instead of the player's name. And it's Jared's job to try and work out who exactly that somebody is. All right. Here we go. Card number one in this week's Local Card Shop of Woolloongabba Kraken. Some dude named LeBron James is the only player in NBA history to collect 1,000 points, 500 rebounds, and 500 assists at a younger age, 19 years, 326 days, than somebody with 20 and 78. The Thunder Star reached that level when he dished the 500th dime during the first minute of a December 27, 2022 win against the Spurs.
Okay. So it's got to be Josh Giddey.
It's got to be Josh Giddey. It is. Yes. All right. Not losing so far. Look at you go. All right.
Now, if Ant was here, I would have been too slow because he would have got it.
You're going to get that feedback from Ant no matter which way this plays out. So that
at least
just
I didn't get a, at least I didn't get a buzzer this week that I can't remember.
Buzzers weren't the problem, mate. The buzzers weren't the problem. Okay, card two for Local Card Shop of Woolloongabba Kraken for this week. All right. Opponents respect what somebody brings to the Raptors. Somebody is playing at a very high level at both ends, said Mavericks coach Jason Kidd. He's talked about as a defensive player of the year with the impact he can have on the defensive side of the ball. You always got to know where he's at on the defensive end for the Toronto Raptors.
OG.
OG Anunoby, number three. There he is. Nice.
A bit generous on his offensive output. But...
well, possibly. Possibly. All right. Next card. Next card. Oh, for the Houston Rockets. It's not Jock Landale. Tell you straight up. Somebody, while making a name for himself in the league, somebody isn't afraid to look back at what made his father an all-star. I remember his energy the most.
So it's Martin, but I'm not going to get his first name.
Yeah. And you can probably work out that
is he a junior?
He is a junior.
Oh, good. Kenyon Martin Jr.
It is. Well done. All right, wait. Look at you go.
Houston was a memorably bad bunch, right?
Yeah.
That 2002, 2023. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Next card for the Local Card Shop of Woolloongabba Kraken. Charlotte's big need is literally big. The team has been in search of a big man to pair with backcourt stars LaMelo Ball and. He'll always be scary Terry to me. Terry Rozier. Somebody will look to fill that role. Pick 15th overall in 2022. The center is an electric rim protector and alley-oop finisher.
So he's from Duke, the Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And I think it's Mark Williams, but I could be way off.
You are bang on, sir. Yes. You are bang on. Look at you go. All right. What, last card.
Look at me now, Ant.
Take away the pressure of a defeat. All right. Look at you go indeed. Okay. Oh, this is a nice card. This is a nice card. I actually have this man's jersey. So.
Well, that doesn't narrow it down.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Okay. Next card for Local Card Shop. Kraken. Let's go. We've got. Houston fought hard on December 2, 2004. Tracy McGrady even scored 48 points. T-Mac had 48 points that night. Despite the challenger's efforts, somebody stole the show, out-dueling his opponents and accomplishing a milestone. The Hall of Famer from Germany scored a career-high 53 points, leading Dallas to a 113-106 win in overtime. And if you do not have it by now...
I also have his jersey, Dirk Nowitzki. Thank you very much.
Which is much harder for you.
Which friend of the program, by the way, Chris Anstey, yes, from Australia. Yes. So there you
brought
go.
Brought him out from Germany.
Look at your 6 degrees of separation on
fire. Yeah, right. I'm basically Kevin Bacon. All right. That brings us to the end of Kraken. Mate, you did quite well.
This is great. Hang it in the Louvre, right?
5 from 5. Yep. No ridiculous over the top.
Rocky montage. I'm going to start playing it for Ian ahead of time. He's going to know that he can't. He's not going to get it all his own way.
Okay. Well, just be careful in Philly, mate. Not everyone gets out unscathed. Just ask Benny Simmons. Or James Harden.
That's not
very fair. We could be at this all night.
A lot of Philly guys.
Yeah.
Michael, continue on.
Not necessarily basketball players either. But anyway, good hard supporters. That's what they are. All right. Another great round of a local card shop of Woolloongabba Crack'em. But as promised, we've got Working Hypotheses with one Gerard Pickering.
Yes, so this week's Working Hypotheses, we're going with focusing on the NBL one. Got the season upcoming. Has been a victim in recent years of scheduling issues that seem to plague Australian basketball. Doesn't matter what level we're at. This particular one, from my perspective, the NBL one is actually a great opportunity for a lot of kids in Australia to get out and see NBL level players up close and personal. And I think it's kind of staggering as a young player to grow up and see the likes of Quatnoy, Will Magne, Kadee. I'm gonna leave players out necessarily. Isaac White, McDonald and Darwin. I mean, there's just a slew of, not to mention all the Capitals players, to see them dominate at the NBL one level and then also be able to appreciate, oh, you know, that's 8 points a game in the NBL. That's this. It's probably the best barometer that some of these kids are going to have to say, well, where do I want to go? And if I have to be NBL level, I've got to be dominating NBL one level. If I want to be dominating at the NBL level, there's a next level above that. And so this Working Hypotheses is we have these great NBL one North, East, South, Central, West, seasons followed by excellent playoff series, and then we have a Nationals that is frankly a dud, and it's a dud because of scheduling, and none of the teams that go are the teams that actually won their NBL one regional final. Is there a way, it's really identifying a problem, not identifying a solution, for us to get these games that matter? And so in the spirit of the NCAA tournament, can we actually extend the amount of teams? Can we have cross-state league teams playing each other earlier in a single elimination type fashion, building up to this final where you can be, you know, in Brisbane and see a team from Melbourne or Sydney or even Western Australia potentially? Now, yeah, I know, logistical nightmare. I get all that. But I think it's just another layer of excitement. And it would be nice for that national champion crown to actually mean something, because those teams that won the state leagues won. So again, there's no great answer here, but I just think the NBL one's a great platform, particularly pricing NBL. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be charging, but if you've got young kids and you want to get them out and around it, NBL one's probably your best bet to see some really good basketball players step on the floor. And also to help your kid understand, look, if you want, this is what you have to do. This is the level. To be in an NBL, you're probably 30 points a night in the NBL one. That how do we get the best teams playing each other from across the conferences rather than excellent state league final series across the board and a dud Nationals?
Yeah, look, it. I won't use such evocative language, but yes, you do get the feeling that there are definitely teams, and the North, we've definitely had this from the North, the dominant team that has won the NBL One North, not all of those members have made it to the Nationals. And each year of the 2 years, you just get the feeling that there's each time there's three, maybe four of the teams that genuinely go are really close to the team that actually went through or close enough to really nudge it. It's tricky because if you could take each team that fights that hard in those grand final and semi-final series, take those actual teams, the Nationals would just be the most watched thing in basketball.
A ton of fun, a ton of excitement for everyone involved. Is there a way to do some, again, these are all questions that we're not going to have answers to, but it would just be, add an additional layer of excitement of how can we watch some of these guys. It's a great platform for a lot of up and coming players. And it just would be cool for that Nationals to be with the teams as intended. I mean, I even go back to Townsville women's 2 years ago, Alana Smith was there, and the Townsville team that went was nothing like the Townsville team that won.
Yeah. Without Alana Smith, it's
a big out, you know, and it just would, it's, you know, all of a sudden you're like, oh yes, you won the Nationals, but you didn't play the teams, and you may not have even been at full strength yourself. So it's just, it takes a little bit of shine off it.
It does. And I know the NBL one of, you know, they have tried to move the season to accommodate. Things definitely got a little bit better last year with the dates and things, but we still had some, you know, some rather big players across the board who then didn't make the trip.
Yeah.
Which,
it's just unfortunate. It's not, you know, still high level basketball, but I think it would just add a little extra juice to those that particular tournament.
For sure. And if all, like I said, if we could get just that grand final game, the teams that play in that grand final game, just as soon as they win, you know, put them on a party bus and take them straight to, like, they can party in the bus all they like, yep, but take them straight to Nationals after winning that game.
Because they're all done within 2 weeks of each other, one or two, it, you know, the proximity.
Yep. It's a two-week, last year it was a two-weekend cycle and it was all done, then they're off to Nationals.
Yep.
So, unfortunately, yeah, just for lots of different reasons and, you know, for some players, they just wanted a break.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because
that's the thing. It's
for them, it's not necessarily an NBL one sort of thing. For some of these things, it's just, you know, the players almost felt as if they'd, you know, fulfilled their contract.
Yeah.
You know, some went off, you know, weird and wonderful places. Some were training, some were just seeing their family. But yeah, if we could just capture in a bubble those grand final winning teams and take them to Nationals.
Yeah. And so maybe the answer is started earlier, have these teams take place so there isn't even a state league final, but more of just, all right, you're in this group, you go and you play for this national title and you're seeing those matchups you're talking about. It would be a lot of fun.
Could be. Would be. That's the great thing about working hypotheses. Yeah. You know, we don't have all the answers, but yeah. It definitely would be spicy. And as you say, a logistical nightmare. Yes, yeah.
That's why it's easy to make it a working hypothesis.
Yes.
practically implemented answer.
Yes. So. But, wouldn't it be spicy?
It would be spicy.
Wouldn't it be spicy? All right. That is going to wrap us up here for Ball Don't Lie Australia for another week. Big thank you, of course, to Dr. Electrical, servicing the North Adelaide and Brisbane areas. And, of course, our ongoing support from the local card shop of Woolen Gabba. If you need some cards, get down and have a chat to Rob and the guys down at the local card shop. They will sort you out. If you are listening on a podcast service that has the option to do 5-star reviews, please do go and do that. That stuff really does help a lot. Mate, thanks for coming on. Always appreciate it.
Love it. And hopefully I'm with my partner in crime next time. We'll see how that goes.
Well, he's busy time.
He's very busy right
now. Busy time. But let's wrap things up like we always do. To you listening to us again, just remember that ball don't lie.
It never does.